The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
New research has found that a universal basic income scheme would require a tax rate of up to 60%. It was just one of four scenarios modelled by the ESRI, which found that giving €14,000 annually to 3.4 million people would cost the state, for example, just under €50 billion. So would a universal basic income scheme be feasible? We're joined by Edgar Morgenroth, Professor of Economics at DCU, and by former Taoiseach, a former Labour Party leader, Joan Burton. Good morning and welcome. The idea of this, Edgar, first of all, who's proposing this? I mean, I know there's a movement out there which suggests it's a panacea for all ills.
So this has been around for a while. It's come from various circles, and it does have a lot to recommend it because the standard social welfare system create some issues like stigmatization. It also doesn't value anything that's done by people who are not working an actual job, who may be carers at home. And it also leaves some people stuck in the social welfare system, where taking a job might mean they lose some other benefits. And of course, we also know that a lot of people in on social welfare or old age pension could still be very poor and living in poverty de facto. And so that's where the idea has originated from.
Because the current pension is what an older person might be living on. And that wouldn't increase greatly, would it, if they just got the basic income as proposed instead?
That's right. And I think we're, you know, looking into the future, if home ownership is decreasing, there are going to be a lot of issues with older people pensioners potentially on the state pension, because we know the penetration of contributory pension is low in Ireland, with those people potentially not being able to pay the rent and then having basically old age, severe old age poverty, which we have seen also in other countries where home ownership is low.
But if the idea of a basic income was given to people and everyone got it, irrespective of their other means and how they were working, isn't that the idea, that everybody gets it?
That's ultimately what you have to do. It has to be universal.
So therefore, would it not be the case that maybe someone would have their old age pension to which they've contributed, and they also get the basic income, which would effectively double their pension and make it very much more comfortable anyway.
Indeed. And it would also be people like you and me also getting it. And I think we neither of us actually need it.
Correct.
So I think that's the issue with the universality of it. Mm. Now, if you only give it to certain segments in society, again, you're creating some disincentive effects. If you say, well, only the people on the lower tax bracket get it, well, it might make some of those people better off than people at the lower end of the higher tax bracket. So they then have an incentive to try and drop down and so on. So as soon as it's not universal, it creates issues.
Now, we had issues during the pandemic when the PUP was being paid, say, to students who might have been earning 120 euro on a weekend for stacking shelves in a supermarket while they were either going to school or going to college or whatever it was. Suddenly the PUP became available and they got 350 initially and they stopped working.
Yeah, and we have a general problem with the nature of a social welfare system, that if you know, you could be on a very good job, lose the job, and end up with a very low income. In other countries, the at least initially, your social welfare payments are dependent on your previous income. That softens the blow for some people, and in the Scandinavian countries, you have that for a period, and then it becomes quite draconian, so that you incentivize people to go back into the labour market.
And that is the issue in an era of what we have here, which seems to be technically full employment. You don't want to encourage people to stay at home if there's any way, with maybe social supports and medical cards and so on, you can get people into work.
Absolutely. Now, we also have to accept that some work is very precarious. You get the 0-hour contracts and things like that. Some work is very poorly paid. And those people could still find themselves in poverty and having lost benefits of the social welfare system.
Now, if it means that the basic tax rate goes up, and I presume, depending on where the bands were set, that people on the would actually be end up paying tax on this universal payment. It wouldn't be a tax-free payment. It would just go into their income pot. So they'd be paying extra tax in order to get this basic income upon which they were paying tax.
Absolutely. You can't really subsidize yourself and make yourself better off. And in fact, with a universal system, that total tax take would have to go up if total spending is going up. And so that burden has to be carried by someone. It probably will have to go more on the higher incomes to retain the progressivity of our system. And the marginal tax rates for those on higher incomes would then have to go up quite a bit. And they're already quite high.
Now, often people will say, well, you know, we have higher tax rates in other countries. But then it's where, at what point you start paying the tax that often marks the difference. So you can be in Britain and not pay their highest rate, which is higher than ours, until you're earning a hell of a lot of money.
Absolutely. And you have other systems which have high taxes, but where there are allowances that would reduce the total tax burden for a family. For example, in Germany, if you have children, you get additional allowances that would typically make you better off than here.
So, bottom line here, I mean, is this a feasible idea or does it have to be like most of our social supports? It's got to be much more targeted.
So feasibility is really an issue of political will.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about the impact on the economy generally. Would it be good for us or bad for us?
Could it be done? It would seem that income taxes would have to go up by quite a bit. The study, I don't think, goes through the implications, the macroeconomic implications, the competitiveness implications and so on. And I think before that has actually been looked at, I don't think it's wise to progress. I think that's something that we really need to get to.
I mean, the impact of paying instead of 40% plus the other bits, the PRSI and the USC, to jump that to 60%. I mean, the upper classes don't necessarily rebel, but I suspect there might be a flight.
That is right. And again, we've seen as recently, for example, in Norway, there were increases in taxes for the richer people, and a certain group of them have left and gone to Switzerland where they pay less tax. Some people are very mobile, particularly at the higher end of the pay scale. Ultimately, it's going to be the less mobile that are going to be paying this. And I wonder how popular it would be to do this. I think it would potentially have a negative impact on the overall economy and our competitiveness, though.
Joan Burton has been listening to our conversation, former Taoiseach, of course, former Labour Party leader, and also was involved in social protection. Joan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. And it's a very interesting discussion. But it's one of those things that would require some very, long-sighted decisions, because you couldn't do this kind of change in the system overnight. I would say if you were starting to look at the system, there are two sets of people in the social welfare system who get a social welfare income. We should look at the issue of older people, particularly people who are retired and maybe just working a small amount of part-time work, which would look to be the pattern in future years to come, people who are able and fit enough and want to do some work. And I think the second one is child benefit. In relation to pensions, we already, if you like, have a sort of basic income structure in that if you have made your contributions, you qualify for the state pension. And for many people, increasingly, that's the most significant element of their pension in retirement, because lots of employers are not, in fact, providing the kind of pension cover they once employed. They once applied for general.
And we will have auto enrollment in time, but there's a gap. Those who are stuck without having had that and advancing in years, and they would not have accumulated anything sufficient to provide a decent pension.
And that's the issue. The second one, and one of the areas where I think it could actually do very well, particularly if it was scale tested in different parts of the country, would be in relation to child benefit. We have child benefit in our system as a universal payment. Now, we also have specific social welfare payments for child dependent allowances, which are only paid to people who have a social welfare income. But the child benefit, if we were to up that so that, for instance, over time, that became a significant, but not as it is, not a means-tested payment, I think that, for instance, could significantly assist families with children. Again, to be honest, it wouldn't be popular with everybody, but we know that...
You're talking about it being still a universal payment, but increasing it. So, you know, people who earn a lot of money would still get it, because, you know, the argument about child benefit is that we get nothing from the state, but we do get child benefit. And it's one of the reasons why various parties, left and right, would be very reluctant to touch the universality of it, because it's that cry.
And also, it has essential features of a basic partial income in respect of a child. I mean, it doesn't cover in any way the cost of rearing a child, but it's a really significant assistance. And it's an enormous assistance as well for families when it comes to things like, for instance, having to spend on back to school and spend on education for children.
It also has the tremendous benefit for the exchequer of knowing that it runs out. You know, at age 18, that's
well,
it, folks.
There you are.
You're done. So it has a fixed end date in each particular family. When the last one reaches 18, it's no longer paid. Meanwhile, someone else is born and gets it. So there's a certain attraction about that. It's kind of limiting itself. Edgar, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Joan makes some very good points there. I agree with what she's saying. Now, the child benefit is a kind of an interesting one, because, again, you say at age 18, your benefit stops, but most parents know that the payments don't stop. And if they're going to college, they might actually, your kids might get a bit more expensive. And again, there are other countries where it doesn't stop with 18.
Yeah. Mind you, that could be tweaked as well.
It stops with the end of formal education.
Yeah. So at age 23, I mean, you couldn't have a hoary old 32-year-old getting child benefit. I mean, that would just be nonsense. So you'd have to put some sort of time frame on it.
It used to be like that in Germany, and some people abused that system. So you would need to have a cutoff somewhere.
The perpetual student.
And I think the other thing that we do have to look at, and, you know, at the moment, we definitely have a very difficult issue, particularly for the generations coming up now, in relation to housing and the cost of housing. So if, for instance, they and their families continue to have a basic income, say, until the age of 22, 23, or when they ended full-time higher education. However, if we could do that for families like that, we would also need to start looking at how do we incentivize and how do we create a structure where in the longer term, younger people are encouraged to, for instance, save towards the purchase or a long lease on a home, on a house, on an apartment, whatever.
Okay. But Joan, today's conversation is about this basic universal income. And I'm wondering, and I'll go to Edgar first on this, we have often heard accusations before, particularly during the Celtic Tiger era, that people were benefit shopping here, you know, that they would go back to their home country in Eastern Europe, be it Hungary or Poland or whatever, but still somehow managed to retain the child benefit that was being paid when they had their kids in Ireland. The idea that anyone coming to Ireland would qualify for a basic income, I mean, you could see the dangers of benefit tourism, even within the EU.
I think that there are rules around a tax resident status, and I think those sort of things need to be enforced properly. You know, and that's how you, I think, deal with this issue. clearly we can't have a situation where all of Europe ends up here because we have the most generous system. That's also not likely, given that we don't have anywhere to house them either. Yeah. So,
but the entitlement to have a house, to be on the housing list as well, is something that obviously we have seen happening. Joan, what about that benefit tourism might result from any such scheme?
Well, I would say the European Union as a whole should move to a system where there's a solid, substantial welfare support system, particularly for older people, and as I was saying, for families with children and for people who are carers and people with disabilities. Because at different stages, I mean, obviously a child is not going to be in the labour market until they become an adult and they finish their education. Similarly, older people are moving out of the labour market. Now, they're all the categories of people, along with people, as I say, who have disabilities and who are carers. And we have a big structure of carers in this country who work very, very hard. So they really deserve to get an income from caring rather than just a payment which barely covers the principal.
But really what you're saying there is that should be acknowledged as work and be paid for as work, which is different to a basic universal income, which wouldn't require any work at all.
Well, I'm just saying that the basic income approach could actually be an easier way to approach that because you're
But I mean, you're giving me then the basic universal income so that you can pay a carer only a fraction anyway of what their work is worth. I'm not sure that universality should apply. Just pay the carers properly.
That's the other alternative. But I think in all of this, what you do need are a series of testing models. There's been one running at the moment in relation to artists, which, it isn't a huge amount of money, but the people who are receiving it are very much buoyed and supported by it. And it's the response from people who have had access to that, and it's a limited number of people, has been very positive. But again, artists are working in a particular environment where often they're not in a position to actually earn what you might call a general level salary in the economy because of the precariousness associated, with working in theatre and in the arts. So I just think that we need to do more kind of sustained testing of different elements.
Edgar, that idea that, you choose to be an artist and you get paid a generous, more than, the job seeker's allowance because you're an artist, because I presume it enriches society generally to have an artistic community.
That ultimately comes down to what we value, and that goes for the carers as well. If you didn't have carers and individuals had to be cared for by the state, it would probably cost a lot more.
Some of the comments coming in, absurd. 14,000 would just cover rent for renters. We need housing for all, not universal basic income. Another one, why are we paying people to have children in this day and age? People choose to have children, it's their choice. Children's allowance was introduced in the 1950s when men were not handing over wages to their non-working wives. It's now an outdated policy, I suppose, looking at global populations and so on. Another one, universal basic income would make people dependent on the good offices of the state and give massive controlling power to the government over the people. Last comments, Edgar, from you?
I think some of the comments are a bit peculiar. I guess one of the on the childcare came from someone who doesn't have children. I think we do need children, and if we want to keep paying our pension, for example, we do need children in our system, and it is
at least to replicate ourselves.
At least to do that, yeah.
All right, Joan.
Well, I think we're living at a time where there are a lot of options now open, partly as a consequence of what we learned during the pandemic, that if states invest in ensuring that people have not just a basic income, but for instance, if they're working, that they have a living rather than a minimum wage, that basically, as Edgar will know as an economist, that basically boosts the economy. And not only is it very good good for the individual and helpful to the individual.
I think Edgar is looking skeptical. It sounds like a perpetual motion machine, does it not?
Of course, it boosts the economy, but it also comes at a cost. So until we know the costs and benefits, both, I think the jury's out.
All right, we leave it there. Joan, thank you very much for joining us. Joan Burton, former Taoiseach, former Labour Party leader. Happy Christmas to you, Joan. And Edgar Morgenroth, Professor of Economics at DCU. Thank you very much for joining us. A quick comment. We already have social welfare tourism here, which has escalated since Brexit. A universal social benefit will only increase social welfare tourism.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.